Connect the Dots with Allison Rose Levy, Saturdays at noon, Eastern, on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and it's a pleasure to be with you on today's show. Every Saturday at noon Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network, Connect the Dots connects the dots between your personal health and your total health environment. I'm Allison Rose Levy. I'm a health and green journalist for 25 years, and also an activist and advocate for all of the connection between health and environment that helps safeguard our food, our water, our health, both on an individual ecological level and on a global and planetary ecological level. And on this show, we talk about all of the different things that really impact our health and that we can do to support our health and address causes of health imbalance on both the personal, community, social, and global levels. So in keeping with that, in today's show, we're going to be speaking with a guest who really has a lot to say about maintaining personal psychological balance in interesting times. You know, they used to say there was a prayer, may you live in interesting times, and I think we're getting to see the full import of that, the opportunity and the challenge of living in times of accelerated crisis while remaining centered and doing everything that we can to really help things go in a positive direction for the sake of everyone. And yet sometimes that can be a challenge in kind of a society, the United States, for example, where we really think very much as individuals, and even though we, you know, kind of talk about interconnectedness, it's not home base for the social values that many of us have learned and the things we've experienced growing up since, you know, our childhood and everything like that. So there's a lot of unlearning, undoing, relearning, redoing to really get to a place where we can function from interconnectedness and wholeness as much as we aspire to it. So we talk about those factors as well. And until our guest joins us, I just wanted to talk a little about what I know many listeners recognize as a recurring topic on this program, which is fracking, hydraulic fracturing. It's a form of gas drilling that uses a lot of toxic chemicals. It was basically pioneered in the last decade and is now a big boom industry. And, you know, and really gives us the opportunity to check our premises and our price, because what some regard as supplying energy needs that are, you know, certain economic benefits, perhaps, to, well, certainly to certain sectors and, you know, perhaps trickling down to others, you know, has some serious downside risks to our food, our water, our health, and our environment. And yet, with so many different issues, how do we avoid a sense of overwhelm, despair, cacophony about all of the noise of the different things that are going on in a time of social unrest and breakdown that kind of need to be addressed? What's primary for you? So these are the kinds of things we talk about on this program. And listeners who are interested in staying a part of that as more of an ongoing conversation in addition to and beyond this weekly show can sign up for my free e-zine, The Health Outlook, which is on my website, healthjournalist.com, and also healthjournalistblog.com. That's where I aggregate all my Huffington posts, as well as if you subscribe, you get a weekly e-zine, The Health Outlook, which also contains a link to posts, as well as links to that week's upcoming radio show, so you can stay on top of that and see if there are guests that you'd like to listen to. In recent weeks, we've had a holistic psychiatrist, someone talking, emergency preparedness expert speaking about that, Susan Griffin, a poet, writer, and environmentalist. We've in the past had Helen Caldicott and Harvey Wasserman speaking about the nuclear concerns and dangers, And we've had, in the past, Dr. Chopra has been on the show. We had Lynn McTaggart in the spring. So it's certainly worthwhile because we cover quite a wide range, always connecting the dots. You can also join in the conversation by joining my Facebook page, and you're warmly invited to do that. It's called Connecting the Dots on Health. And I post a lot of links for people who want to kind of get involved and stay more active. And the Weekly eZine also has a selection, you know, one or two links per week, if that's the level of activism that, you know, feels right to you. If you want more of daily kind of opportunities, then you can sign up on my Facebook page. And I provide a lot of links to a diverse range of issues, ranging from GMOs and organic foods to water safety, to the nuclear concerns, a whole range of different things, as well as important initiatives to maintain an open internet and a free press, because that's how we get the information we need to be citizens and manage our society. And this week, I'm just going to do a little update on the current status of fracking in New York State. As many listeners are probably aware, both from this show and from the film Gasland and other sources, this rush to get gas, shale gas, it's called, has been going on internationally and in many regions of the United States. If you look at a map, it's actually about a third of the country. And what's different here is now with New York is that it's gradually been creeping up into the Northeast and has instated the process in Pennsylvania, our neighboring state, and is now poised to cross the border and begin in New York State, because this is occurring because Governor Cuomo in early July lifted a ban that had been in place all year and is basically issuing new regulations with the idea that it's going to open the doorway on fracking in New York. New York City residents, you know, may tend to feel that because he specifically prohibited it around the upstate New York reservoir, which supplies New York City's water, you know, there's a sense of, oh, well, it won't affect us. And I just want to kind of debunk that a little bit for a couple of reasons. One is there's no guarantee at all. In fact, it's virtually certain that his wish to keep it out of the New York reservoirs will be fought, both by area residents who are financially desperate, as well as by the huge multinational companies who really don't want to see a boundary on their activities. We also know from watching what has occurred in our state of Pennsylvania that when fracking comes to a region, in addition to the, you know, water, air, food, and other threats, health threats, there is also a kind of threat to democracy, because since the time of Citizen United, where people can subsidize elected officials' campaigns without it really being known who they are, how much they give, what their agenda is, or even if they originate in the United States or not, you know, there's a, you know, there's been a geometric proportional increase in the number, the pressure upon politicians really to either succumb and play ball with these powerful industries and individuals with deep pockets, you know, because of course they fear that they'll be outspent. If they don't go along, then these people will and have funded opponents, no matter how poorly qualified, inarticulate, or indeed mentally unstable they may be. So, you know, with that, you know, politicians are unfortunately placed in a position where there's powerful incentives to compromise and accept this kind of funding and then come up with compromise solutions, which may or may not work. For example, in the case of fracking, the sense is, well, it's a compromise to say, well, we'll take a magic marker and we'll draw a line around the New York City upstate water reservoir and say, well, we won't frack there. Does that provide a total guarantee for New York City residents? Not really. In fact, not close. It's kind of, when, if you look at it just on a soundbite basis, something like that sounds good. And unfortunately, so many of us are so busy that we don't drill deeper, as it were, beyond the soundbite. So it sounds good. It sounds like you're protected. The water of New York City would be protected by that move, and it certainly it is a form of protection. So I don't want to deny that at all. But it's not an absolute protection for a variety of reasons that I'll mention. One is that the water, some of New York City residents' water is supplied through the Delaware River, and the Delaware River Valley Basin is scheduled for fracking, quite extensive fracking, in the areas directly on the riverbed adjacent to the river. So the proportion of water that will come from, you know, to New York City and suburban residents and Philadelphia residents and others that comes from the Delaware River is completely vulnerable. Secondly, in the other areas of upstate, you know, there may be some things that one can sort of sequester somewhere, but and say, you know, this is we've locked this in a box. It's not going any further. It's in a vault. We know where this is, and it can't budge. Well, you know, that can't be said of water. It can't be said of air. It can't be said of toxic chemicals or radioactive waste. When you unleash these things and put various things on the move, these are all things that flow in water or in air patterns, in underground streams, in aquifers. You know, so it's really, if in the fracking process, 500 to 600 toxic chemicals are mixed with water and sent at very high pressure underground in order to break the rock to release the gas, and they go in horizontal casings under people's property to the pockets where the gas is. So, you know, they go, the gas companies point out that, in fact, they drill down and through aquifers, and so the cement casing keeps those poisonous materials inside, and you know, so that it doesn't, theoretically, so that it doesn't contaminate the aquifer. The problem with that is, as we learned in the Gulf oil spill, human error, mechanical error, a bubble in a piece of cement, poor transport, or a host of other things, puts us in a position where we are, you know, failure in a cement pipe, and often they're made by the Halliburton Company, is the sole barrier between an aquifer that flows underground and connects with other water sources downstream, you know, from the areas which are north of New York and Philadelphia. You know, only that pipe is the barrier, and if that pipe has a bubble or, you know, is mishandled or something happens, those contaminants do enter aquifers and travel. Next, people, you know, that's potential, and in fact, studies have shown that, you know, despite all the measures or whichever measures are taken, and of course they're not extensive because of the lack of regulation of this process on both a federal and a state level, you know, if even with those measures, it's been demonstrated by studies done at Duke University that the chemicals do find their way into water supplies and migrate. And, you know, another factor which Sandra Steingraber, author of the book Raising Elijah, mentioned is that there's also an impact on air quality. So New York City, actually, unlike L.A. and other places, has pretty good air. And as a New York City native, I've long noticed that. And, of course, New York City is set on water. But that's not the only reason. One of the reasons that it does have good air is because it's on an airstream that comes down from the woods and forests and pristine rural and agricultural lands of upstate New York. That good air, and in fact, the regions where the fracking is slated to occur has the best air quality of any place in the entire state. And so that air, which is now good air, is on an airstream that goes down through the city and pushes, you know, the traffic and particulate matter and other air from New York out to water. Well, out to sea. And so, it kind of that flow of fresh air is what keeps the New York City air good. So, you know, imagine what would that would be like if air was high ozone levels and all the rest of it is due to the industrialization of the area, only a brief two-hour drive north of the city. Suddenly that could really dramatically shift the air quality of New York, which is, you know, that's really, I mean, that's something that I think, you know, people in L.A. can tell us about. In areas of the West, even wilderness areas where fracking has occurred, within a short period of time, they have the kind of smog conditions, even in the middle of a very remote area, that would typically only happen in a place like L.A. is now happening there due to this kind of rapid industrialization. In other words, there are quite a number of risks and concerns. Finally, although fracking was positioned and branded by the gas industry as natural gas, it's actually, you know, the gas itself may be natural, but all of it is released along with it. The chemicals used to access it, radioactive hazardous waste that we're then left to try to dispose of that follows the process, and the many, many, many miles of trucking, all of this everywhere in order to use this is not only natural, but unnatural, but it's not green, it's costly, it's environmentally damaging. It has a whole other, bunch of problems with it. And to add insult to injury, even, you know, the direct drilling process itself releases methane in ways that negatively impact CO2 levels in a manner just as bad, if not worse, than coal mining, than mountaintop coal removal. And this has been found by studies done in New York State by distinguished researchers and climatologists. So for all of these reasons, fracking is a real serious problem, and I'm mentioning all this because I don't want anyone to feel, you know, if it's not happening in my neighborhood, I'm unaffected, because in fact we are all at risk. So my recommendation for listeners to our show is, if you are anywhere in the nation or the globe and wish to connect with a lot more information about this process, you can check in at my website, healthjournalist.com. You can also go to CatskillCitizens.org, which is the organization Catskill Citizens for Safe Energy, and they have quite an extraordinary compilation of resources, articles, links, research, updates. Highly, highly recommended. If you are a second homeowner of the upstate regions who, you know, also lives downstate, you might want to consider voting, registering to vote in the regions in order to protect our greener areas of New York State. And if you're in the city, please also join these groups in New York or in Philadelphia to help protect your water downstream. That was kind of a longer intro than I usually give, but I hope it was helpful. And please do feel free to write me at info@healthjournalist.com if you have any questions about this or any things that you'd like me to discuss on future programs. Now I'd like to bring in our guest. I am so pleased that she was able to join us, and coming in a time of crisis, here we are, and she actually, we'll talk more about it when she's on, but I want to introduce energy psychologist Beth E. Baker, and actually she does a lot of work with stabilizing, grounding, staying calm, being present to yourself and to whatever is happening, which is pretty much one of the most essential traits, I think, that you know, we can cultivate to navigate through times like this. So I just wanted to welcome you to Connect the Dots, Beth, and so delighted to have you here with us.
good afternoon, and I'm glad to be here, too.
It's been a busy time, and I know also a busy day for you, because Beth is so calm and collected that she's actually appearing here on Connect the Dots on the very day that her daughter is getting married. Now, I ask you, how many people could do that? If that's not a recommendation for what you practice, I don't know what is. Congratulations to your family, Beth, at this time.
Thank you very much. Just a minor but significant point that really does matter. Mm-hmm. I am an expert in the practice of energy work, which is related to human psychology, but I'm going to leave the psychologists for their work. I'm a practitioner and a facilitator rather than a therapist.
Okay.
It's good to make that distinction because, you know, we like to respect each other's territories.
That makes total sense. Yes. No, it's very important. And, you know, there are a lot of different fine-tuned specialties out there. So tell us a little bit, tell our listeners, what is energy psychology?
Okay, energy work, energy psychology that has beneficial impact on our emotional constitution and our emotional state has a very wide spectrum of tools available. It's very exciting. I have many colleagues in lots of different related fields, and we're all doing good work. Mine in particular is known as EFT, or Emotional Freedom Technique, often also referred to as meridian tapping technique, because we actually do acupressure tapping on the meridian points that are pertinent for releasing what I think of as stuck emotions, so that we can our energy can flow again and we can be present with ourselves in the moment instead of stuck with unprocessed trauma and emotion, keeping us in behind a barrier with our present moment.
Mm-hmm.
The other tool I use very often, about which I'm really excited and doing more and more work all the time, is Psych-K, which is short for psychological kinesiology. They're different kinds of work, but I find them highly complementary. I should start with EFT, because besides being the work with which I've been familiar the most years, it is very accessible to all of us. Actually, I have a vision of the basic EFT tapping and the word sequence that we learn to use to help ourselves to balance our emotions and clear the way for being in the present moment calmly and with all our faculties on board. I would like to see everyone know this the way now we know the Heimlich maneuver. Do you remember when we were kids, Allison, when people would just whack each other on the back if they were choking, and no one knew about the Heimlich maneuver?
And that was totally, you know, I have to tell you something, Beth. The earlier radio show before Connect the Dots, you know, Connect the Dots is kind of like the continuation of my earlier radio show that I did with the late scientist Rustin Broy, and that was called Whole Person Healing. It was on a different channel, and we actually had Dr. Heimlich on the show.
that's giving me that feeling.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
I don't think too many people can say that, actually. So, you know, I think it's really interesting what you say. And also, I just chime in one more thing, and then, you know, but one thing he said, which really was surprising, because, you know, it's kind of so well accepted now, and of course, you know, slapping people on the back is exactly the wrong thing to do. It's like everyone's first impulse, but if someone's choking, that's the worst thing that you could do. But actually, he shared with us, and the show is in archives for anyone that would be interested, but he shared with us that he had a lot of trouble gaining acceptance for this. It was quite a journey, and so even though we all know of it now, That was not always so, and it was quite a row to hoe to get there, he was telling us. So that's really funny that you mention him.
Well, I remember that, and he truly, oh, I wish I had listened to that show, but I was busy with the pre-wedding proceedings.
Right.
I will have to hear it on archive because he's my hero.
And
I recall when there was that big fight about accepting his Heimlich maneuver, which gives me immense inspiration to see EFT be as readily available, and everyone just says, "Oh, do EFT? Are you sad? Let's do some tapping together." We colloquially we call it tapping because that's what you do.
Or do you want to describe the procedure a little bit?
Sure. Well, the procedure itself starts with what we call the karate chop point, and that's just as easy as imagining if you were going to be a karate expert and wear the side of your hand halfway between your wrist and the base of your little finger, either hand, the edge of the hand, where your hand would hit what you were going to karate chop. Mm-hmm. And people can tap on it lightly with a couple fingers from the other hand, or make their hands perpendicular to each other and easily bop the two sides of the hands together. Mm-hmm. That's the first point.
Mm-hmm.
The second point is exactly on the top of your head. I'm
you know
doing
what?
It right now.
You know what I'm thinking is, I think to go through and describe this verbally, you know, given the amount of time we have, I think it might be better to refer people to a visual. And then, or just give the general idea of the principle that you're kind of tapping on different points, because I just, I think it's, you know, it might be a little hard to picture.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I being not quite aware of what our time parameters were, I appreciate the tip. Okay, fundamentally what we do is we access acupressure points on the body to assist emotional energy that's related to emotion, or as we say, emotions are energy in motion, but when we're distressed, when we're in the fight, flight, or freeze mode, we seize up, we tighten up around our emotions, and the flow is interrupted, and that's where we get out of the present moment, and we lose our power when we use the EFT with the verbal, emotional, and the physical focus on what it is that needs to be released into the flow again. Then we get back in the flow and we center and become our whole selves and are ready to rock and roll.
So the sense is that the tapping on that those points actually acts as a release. Is that right?
Absolutely. And it's an interesting thing that whether I'm tapping on myself or if I'm tapping with another person, or when we're working with children, we have a wonderful teddy bear called Tappy Bear who has all the points marked on his cute furry body. When children tap on Tappy Bear, no matter how we do it, either surrogately or on ourselves, the benefit occurs just the same. So there's some fascinating and wonderful quantum effect that's happening here.
That's amazing.
It's amazing. It's wonderful. I love it. And it's so easy. I had a call from a young woman in crisis recently. Not that this is just for crisis, but this is a dramatic example. She had just been through a beating where her sadly, her husband had broken her arm, and she was very shaken. Well, she was in a safe place, but she was just completely shaken. And just over the phone, the first time we ever spoke, I said, "Start tapping with me, and just let yourself feel. You're feeling the feelings, and you will feel them. You'll feel yourself begin to calm." And we went through it, and went through the sequence over and over again. And in less than 10 minutes, she says, "Beth, I'm all right now."
Oh my.
It's that easy. It's that effective. I had hypoxia seizures for a decade and a half. It's not the same as epilepsy, but you can be injured or die from it just the same. And I ended my hypoxia seizures in less than 5 minutes, painlessly and silently, using EFT.
That's amazing.
That's when I was convinced I wanted to go pro with this. I said,
"Oh my
goodness,
this
is great. We've got to get it to the world." I have colleagues who are bringing this wonderful work to populations in traumatized area. There is Deepak Mostert in Indonesia. He went in after, he's a New Zealander, after the last big tsunami, mm-hmm. and he has been teaching people to teach one another. Mm-hmm. It's the most beautiful thing you've ever seen. Mm-hmm. Another of my colleagues, I blush, we'll have to put the information later, her name is eluding me, mm-hmm. is working in Rwanda mm-hmm. with the adolescent survivors of the Rwanda tragedy.
Oh my God.
And, and these young men and women are mm-hmm. getting their lives back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one end of the spectrum. The other end is, and I say this with total approval, I love the idea, and mm-hmm. I love working with these people, laid-back guys who want or gals who want to improve their golf scores.
Mm-hmm.
You do it with EFT.
Mm-hmm.
I have a client, mm-hmm. I had a client mm-hmm. who worked with me three times,
mm-hmm.
and he was seeking to improve his college entrance scores, and his reading scores went up 40% after three sessions.
Well, all you
healthy,
students
happy,
and all you golfers
man.
Out there, that's something, you know, to really put on your spectrum of stuff to do to improve your game or to improve your academics. I mean, that's amazing, really.
What we like to say, try it on everything.
Mm-hmm.
Try it on everything. There are people who have done things with this that I wouldn't dare to try to claim. I'm thinking, that sounds ridiculous to me, but it worked for them because everything is comprised of energy anyways. This
mm-hmm.
is a well-known principle, although I think our Newtonian mindset has a bit to catch up with that.
Mm-hmm.
And with EFT, you have the power yourself, literally right in your hands.
Mm-hmm.
Some people like to say that the technique is powerful. I'm boldly going to say that that is not true.
Mm-hmm.
It is you who are powerful. The mm-hmm. technique allows you to access the power that you have.
Mm-hmm.
And I, as a facilitator, I'm very skilled at what I do, and I take great joy in it.
Mm-hmm.
But my skill is in being a catalyst for my clients.
Mm-hmm.
It's their power that matters rather than mine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really interesting. That's really great. I'm actually, you know, personally familiar with this because I actually said this. Well, I trained with Roger Callahan, and I also worked sort of in backstage on some book projects where Gary Craig was involved. And mm-hmm. So I have, you know, familiarity with this as well as personal experience with it.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that's so interesting about it is that it can go all the way from just being something that any novice can use in a moment, you know, to
mm-hmm.
kind of feel better about something that's kind of bugging you. I actually did it yesterday because I just had a conversation where I felt residue, I would say, in my body.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like yucky and weird afterward for some reason. And I wasn't able to just dispel it through insight. And so I did tap and got, you know, kind of in it passed. But, and released and everything. So, you know, an individual can just simply use it that way, and it can be used with tremendous skill by facilitators like Bess and therapists to really kind of get into the different layers and veils and unpeel, you know, the depth of different things that may go into feeding, you know, kind of a nexus or a pattern within ourselves. Or a habit like addiction, or patterns like, you know, certain patterns in relationship or work or family that dog you and that are unproductive and that, you know, seem to keep coming back no matter how much you've suffered with them and feel you've developed awareness, you know. So, you know, I actually also, Beth, I don't know if you've ever talked about this, but I do a form that actually clears ancestral patterns. It's called Family Constellation Work. So it actually takes healing into the systemic dimension. But through the energetics, EFT is systemic in that it's energetic and the energy is interconnected among us all in ways that are felt and just, you know, kind of science is beginning to piece that together more and more in our time. So that is, you know, I mean, it's really impressive also that it can be used. I remember the first time I ever saw it demonstrated, somebody with a fear of heights, you know, and the teacher walked her over to a window and was like, you know. And then later to climb a very tall ladder.
Those are the most fun things to do. And I want to point out that some things, even what we think of as very big things, mm-hmm. can be ready to release and clear in a really short time. Some things take longer, but there's one characteristic that is true for all of this work that at least the tools that I choose to use is immense compassion. Mm-hmm. Now, I have a background in psychology mm-hmm. with various other therapies. It'd take a long time to go through my list because mm-hmm. I've been around for a while practicing. Mm-hmm. However, all of them involved a pretty high level of pain and re-traumatization for mm-hmm. the participants.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes with EFT or with Psych-K, mentioning these because they're the ones I work with,
mm-hmm.
There can be a brief distress, but I want to emphasize brief. And even then, with the energy work, we are able to keep it to a very low minimum and to virtually eliminate further traumatization in the course of becoming free from whatever unnecessary barriers have built up in the person's life.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that really distinguishes this work from all the other psychology-related work that I've ever done before, is the high level of very efficient effectivity together with a very low level of recurring suffering. I just love it for that.
That's amazing. So when you or other practitioners work therefore, I mean, one of the issues there is that you're in a way maybe putting yourself out of business.
I love to put myself out of business.
Uh-huh.
I love it. My uh-huh. colleague Till Schilling, who mm-hmm. Works a great deal in Quito, Ecuador, because mm-hmm. he's a very international guy, he has a friend there, a psychologist, who presented him with all of her patients who were not recovering. They were taking a very long time, and he completely cleared out her roster of clients. Completely. You know what she said? That's wonderful. It makes room for more people whom I can help and who can get their needs met. What an attitude. I love it.
That's amazing. That's really
That's
great.
That's my attitude. I am fearless uh-huh. about working myself out of business mm-hmm. because I believe that life knows what it's doing,
mm-hmm.
and I am unafraid to see people be happy, well, and free from needing me.
Mm-hmm.
I want people to have their integrity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I live in Wisconsin, and we have an expression that's kind of a metaphor for let's all be happy. Mm-hmm. Everybody polka.
Everybody polka. I like that. That's great. Everybody
yeah.
polka.
That brings up another point about uh-huh. this work. Uh-huh. It's fascinating to watch situations where people can be even in the most gravest of sadness,
uh-huh.
or, and we respect that,
uh-huh.
or in really great fear or anger or whatever this gripping emotional state is
mm-hmm.
from that lower brainstem mm-hmm. pool that we get stuck in.
Yeah.
And we will be tapping and suddenly humor and lightheartedness will break out.
Mm-hmm.
And we realize, I respect myself, but oh my God, I don't have to take myself so seriously anymore.
Right, right.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Life is light and easy.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. That's super. That's really great. That's really a lot of fun. How many years have you been doing this?
Well, I trained initially with Gary Craig, about 15 years ago. I'm one of the people featured on the original DVD training series with, so that everyone who trains with those, when they meet me, they think they know me personally already. I spent a long time after that just kind of on my own, noodling around with it. I'm one of those people who wants to absolutely make sure that something is real with me and for me under all circumstances before I spring it on other people. I have this this very high ethics thing going with my clients. And then it must, so I was working with this for many years in my home with my friends. You might say casually, certainly not literally professionally as a business. And then about 3 or 4 years ago, I decided I would plunge in and make it my work and fulfill my calling in helping people to find their own power and use it to the max. And I love doing this. And it's been a great trip, and I can hardly wait to see what's going to happen every new day.
Okay, that's really cool. That's really, really cool. So, I mean, do you then, do you train people in it more so treat individual clients, or, you know, what is your, you know, what would you say you do most of?
Mostly... I do, at this time, I have worked with individual clients. I have done some courses. I was teaching a group of, did a workshop. I was invited by Dr. Adam Reinflesch of University of Wisconsin Integrative Medicine last fall to teach a group of resident physicians. That was absolutely a hoot. They were wonderful and so open-minded. So I do workshops with groups of people, and I work with individuals as well. And for the training to become a practitioner oneself, I would be thrilled to refer any inquirers to my senior colleagues who do that work, actually. I may be moving in that direction at some point, but at this time, I have my focus is more on working with individuals, teaching groups from 3 to 3,000. I don't care. It's all the same to me. It's great. And when people want to become practitioners themselves, then I'm absolutely thrilled to refer them to my senior colleagues who do that work as well.
What are there any good books that could acquaint people?
Well, as you have worked with Gary Craig with some book projects, there are a series of EFT books that are available readily, very nice little booklets through Amazon.com. All you do is go to Amazon. There are several of them, so I'm going to save the time the naming them all. And you just look, tap the word in EFT at Amazon or on Google or any other search, and you will find the books. All of us who have websites have free wonderful free material. An enterprising individual could knit together a wonderful initial training sequence for him or herself just using the free material from colleagues and myself when my website is back up. And also there are wonderful videos at YouTube. Several, I have yet to put any up there yet, but I'm thrilled to mention people like Robert Smith with his Faster EFT, and EFT Wizard is another one to look for. That's his name is Yates. Wonderful, wonderful work. Helena Summer Medina has some wonderful videos there, and I could mention many more. Till Schilling. I'm just pulling names off the top of my head, and I apologize to my other wonderful colleagues. I don't mean to neglect you, but if you look up EFT on YouTube, you can really start to get yourself a wonderful education and just tap right along with them. It won't quite fit you. You know, it's kind of like off the shelf clothing, but it'll get you started.
So, and those will also show you the points and
yes.
And all of that. What is your perception of, you know, I realize it has, you know, as you're saying, pretty universal application and value, but in this particular time, what do you think people are, you know, what's really going on in terms of the stresses on people right now that this could be helpful with, or that people need to be mindful of and understand? It's not just, you know, me or you know, it's you know, some things that you may observe that a lot of people are experiencing in a time like this one.
Okay, briefly, about 3 years ago, I had a conversation with living systems expert Margaret Wheatley, and we discussed the phrase, the convergence of catastrophes.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that someone who is not confronting anxiety, fear, sadness, and anger right now is, I don't know, they're deficient. I don't mean that we should be there, but it's a reasonable response to the catastrophes that the human species is facing right now.
Right.
So, and just very briefly, mm-hmm. I want to stay on topic.
Mm-hmm.
There are people in their fear who are a smaller group of people who are clutching very hard at control, and they kind of like it for the quote unquote the masses to be very afraid,
mm-hmm.
because then we are more manipulatable.
Mm-hmm.
And to that I say bunk.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer my own divine inner guidance to someone else dragging me around by the nose. Thank
mm-hmm.
you very much.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have solutions
mm-hmm.
to our problems if we are in our calmness and
mm-hmm.
we can choose if we wish to be upset or not.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I use EFT, when I use Psych-K, when I use any techniques from heart math, when I make reference to family constellations, any of these practices I do, even if I just sit down and breathe,
mm-hmm.
I begin to move the energy in my body from where it is stuck in the lower brain stem
mm-hmm.
with those really primitive responses of I've got to run, I've got to fight, or I'm so scared I can't even move, fight, or flee, freeze.
Mm-hmm.
And it allows the energy to flow forward up into the prefrontal cortex
mm-hmm.
where our ability to think, assess, make good decisions, make intelligent choices
mm-hmm.
resides.
Mm-hmm.
There is wonderful work being done right now, Allison, with brain scanning before, during, and after sessions with energy psychology like Psych-K and EFT,
mm-hmm.
literally demonstrating the electrical energy moving from being overbalanced, too heavy in the lower brainstem, to bringing it to the prefrontal cortex
mm-hmm.
so that people, instead of being running around like, as we would say, deer in the headlights, we become as intelligent and capable and calm and strong as we really truly are.
Mm-hmm.
And from that place, as we cooperate with one another and we respect ourselves and each other, I am convinced that we can create amazing solutions way outside the boundaries of all our preconceptions.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what they are. Someone says, well, smarty pants, what do you think they are?
Mm-hmm.
My answer is, let's see what we can do and let's find out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's very hopeful. So, for example, if people, you know, see the latest kind of crazy... You know, the thing I like about what you're saying, too, is, like, if people, for example, like, very often the teachings in, of people who are more into calming the mind and all of that, which is certainly highly valuable, but it's kind of like if you actually, in these times, watch the events of the day, that is not moving in the direction of calming the mind unless you're already a very advanced practitioner of some kind, and I haven't been in that place, so I'm only hypothesizing basing that on what others say. What they claim, and it could be true. I'm not ruling it out, but I can't vouch for it either from personal experience. So, so what you're saying is this is not, you know, disengage with the world. It's be present
no.
and be able to improve the ability to stay centered and cope while in it. I mean, is that, would you say, the philosophy?
Absolutely. And as a matter of fact, I choose to employ all the stresses and aggravations I go through every day as energy resources. And I can, I'm able to do that with EFT and with Psych-K. One or the other or both are always going to serve me that way. For example, I just drove from Wisconsin to New Mexico, Taos, New Mexico, all by myself. I am notorious as a bug-eyed, hysterical driver. God forgive me, but it's true. I made this whole trip, and I kid you not, it was as calm and pleasant for me as if I took a 40-minute drive out in the country to go have a good time with friends. It blew me away. If you saw me before and after, you would say, sign me on. I don't care what you're doing. It's working.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I'm really curious when you say that you use the anxiety or trepidation that could have been created by that actually to energize. Now, are you saying then that, for example, if you release the tension you might feel about driving on the road, it actually releases more innate energy or permits you to access more energy? How does that work? I think a lot of people would like to have more energy.
Well, yeah.
To do what we have to in this time. How does that work?
When we're born, let's say we have like an energy bank account. And some other time I'll talk about what kind of impairment someone might be born with. But let's just say for now you have an energy bank account. Your birth is traumatic. Boom. There's some of your energy that gets sidetracked into dealing with a trauma that's not healed. Trauma isn't healed. It's like a tape loop. It goes and goes and goes. And then you're 2 years old. Boom, there's another trauma. You're five. Boom, boom, boom. You get to a certain age. Where's your bank account? It's all in these tape loops of trauma that is, or trouble or stress or whatever on your mind. You take that energy back with the energy shifting techniques that we use, which are very easy, and anybody can do them. And then you have that energy again. Now let's say, okay, I'm here right now, and something happens. There's a loud noise, and it startles me, and that's stressful for me. Well, I can either invest into worrying about it. And let's say I start worrying. Okay, I go, oh, look at me, I'm worrying. So I'm going to do some tapping. And I realize as I tap that my subconscious mind is just trying to take care of me. And I say, good for you. I love and accept myself just the way I am. This
oh,
is
you know,
a key
that's
point.
Beautiful. I'm
that's
glad you
where
got
it
to
all
that.
Starts.
Because we are actually on the last minute of our show.
Oh,
and
well, that's a good place to stop.
So,
loving,
you know, that's always the final resolution, I think, of the EFT. So I want to, I'd love to do a special thing today in completing our show, which is first to thank you, Beth E. Baker, energy facilitator, energy psychological facilitator, for acquainting me and our listeners on Connect the Dots. And I also want to finish, we can say it together, and everyone can say it with us, because I think it really helps with all that's going on. And we're going to say at the end of this little phrase, we're going to say what you just said, which is, I love and accept myself just the way I am. So it goes, with all that's going on right now, and all that I have to cope with, and all that we have to cope with, and here we go, I
love and accept myself just the way I am.
So please say that, listeners, and remember to say that. Look up more about EFT. Thank you, Beth, so much for being with us on Connect the Dots. And thank you, listeners. And please join us again next Saturday at noon Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network for Connect the Dots. Oh,